He's about 455 yards away. He's going to hit about a 2-iron, I think.
This is the School of Motion podcast. Come for the MoGraph, stay for the puns.
We're still newfangled. Like, our name is still newfangled. We'll still stand behind the meaning of that word. But we know who we are now much more than we used to. And so we really believe in the power of design, and we wanted to go through a very deliberate process to communicate what we stand for, crystallize who we are, and really make it clear what we bring to the table as a diverse company. And so we're just like more confident now than we ever have been before. And so I feel like it's that moment for us where we're very confident. We can kind of raise our glass and make a toast and say, this is who we are. And we want our logo, color palette, and overall brand to really reflect that confidence that we're feeling in this moment.
Motioneers, how do you know when your logo has gotten a little too old? When do you know that you need a rebrand? Now, that's a very loaded word, and a lot of us haven't really been through this process before. Whether you're a freelancer, you work for a studio, or you own your own studio, figuring out how to present yourself to the world, to your clients, to your peers, to potential hires, it's one of the toughest questions we can face as motion designers. And I always find it kind of funny because we're asked to solve that problem for our clients every single day. But when we have to do it for ourselves, it can be really difficult. That's why today, Motioneers, I'm bringing in Michaela Vandermost and Stephen Keller to talk about how they teamed up to figure out how to, let's call it, refresh Newfangled Studios logo and brand to the world. We're in for a treat. So sit tight, buckle up, and let's learn a little bit about branding.
I want to give a great, great thank you to all people that work in School of Motion. I feel much more secure, stronger in my designs, and I know how to do what I want to do and how to make it happen. Thank you, all you guys. Thank you to my TA, the TA Summit. Yeah, my name is Ignacio, and I'm a School of Motion alumni.
Michaela, I just want to start this off by talking about where Newfangled came from and how you approach this idea of needing a new logo and a refresh, because the studio itself is not in a typical kind of scenario that you find a studio looking for a rebrand or a refresh. Normally, it's a studio in trouble, or it's a studio that's in a huge change, probably like personnel have changed or an owner has left. So Michaela, I have to ask, why is now the time to refresh your branding for the entire studio when you're very successful?
So a lot of people are asking, like, why are you doing this? Because we're definitely the busiest and most successful that we've ever been. And so why take the time and spend the money and the effort to refresh our look? And I think the short answer is that the old brand wasn't reflecting the quality of work and the confidence that we have now. But the longer answer is that at our core, we're still newfangled. Like, our name is still newfangled. We'll still stand behind the meaning of that word, which is going about things in a uniquely different way. That's what I set out to do 12 years ago. That's what we're still doing today. But we know who we are now much more than we used to. And so we really believe in the power of design, and we wanted to go through a very deliberate process to communicate what we stand for, crystallize who we are, and really make it clear what we bring to the table as a diverse company. And so we're just like more confident now than we ever have been before. And so I feel like it's that moment for us where we're very confident. We can kind of raise our glass and make a toast and say, this is who we are. And we want our logo, color palette, and overall brand to really reflect that confidence that we're feeling in this moment.
Can you tell me a little bit, because I've always really liked the newfangled logo. Can you tell me how that was created before we go into creating this new kind of rebrand refresh?
So the old logo, you know, we came up with the name Newfangled. Newfangled basically means like distinctly different or a different way of going about things. A lot of people use it as a negative connotation, like, oh, a newfangled technology. but we sort of liked taking ownership of that word and saying, no, like, we want to do things in a new and different way. And so the company was built on that. And that remains. We're still newfangled, but still stand behind the meaning of that word today. But when we originally branded, I wanted to go more of like a nostalgic route. And so it kind of has that like baseball, like old school lettering to it. And it was supposed to kind of be a throw to the negative connotations of that word, like almost a little sarcasm. And at the time, the studio was, you know, it was me and my wife. We started it together. It was just us. Like, I worked with the designer, Matt Nabashek, a long time ago. And at the time, it was a really cool, fresh logo that had meaning to me to the extent of what I knew Newfangled was at the time, which is just a cool studio that was going to do things in a new and different way and just kind of blaze our own trail. And that was the extent of the logo. It also had a little hat and a mustache that was really cool back then. And the hat really symbolized like one person taking on multiple things. Because mm-hmm. at the time I was, you know, it was just kind of me and my wife and some interns. And that's not really, you know, that left our brand identity quite some time ago because it just didn't really feel applicable anymore. And we dropped that and just did the Newfangled piece. So we're just not that same company anymore.
I mean, that's pretty amazing to have an identity and just a design that's supposed to signify a studio. Like you said, that you didn't even fully understand exactly where the studio was going to go over the course of 10 years. But for it to last that long is a pretty impressive kind of mark of just the work that was done then. Was there a specific moment or a specific incident that triggered you into wanting to kind of take a look at this? Or was it just kind of like a slow gradation over time where, you know, like you look at your business card or you look at your website and it eventually was like, okay, now's the time?
There were some very technical things. Like the logo was built at a time where the world was not digital first. It was a broadcast world we were living in. And the logo was long and skinny and fits beautifully in a 16x9, you know, frame. It doesn't mm-hmm. fit in a square. It doesn't fit in a 9x16. So there are just some very sort of technical, you know, when you scale it down really small, it doesn't read as well. And all of that was because it was built at a time where things went onto a TV, where you looked at things large and you looked at things 16x9. So those are, you know, those are some of the technical reasons. But then there were the emotional reasons to do with the pride that we have in our studio. And that when the studio was built, it was, you know, it was myself and Jenna, and it grew to be much larger than me. And I brought on people who are so much more talented than I could ever hope to be. And they weren't feeling the pride in that logo. And so there was like 2 years ago, Corey, who's head of design at Newfangled, brought me like a whole deck. He made a whole deck on the reasons that the logo didn't work. And I took it as like a personal attack. And so then it just became a running joke of the time that Corey made a PowerPoint about how much he hates me. But because it's your company mark just feels so mm-hmm. personal. It feels like your clothing or your own personal style. It feels like your haircut, you know? And so I think I was blinded for a long time that it wasn't working anymore. And I needed to have outside players who I trusted tell me that this isn't working, Michaela. And then it took me a very long time, like years, to come around to it.
I was going to ask if it was hard for the team to consider moving away from the old brand, but nope. It sounds like it was harder for you.
It was me. It was me and Jenna. It's our baby, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. No, you can't change your first kid's first name after he's been born.
Yeah.
So you make this decision. It sounds like you have your team's kind of full kind of approval and kind of momentum behind
yes.
it. But then making the decision is one thing, but then deciding how to approach it's a whole other thing. And I would assume like the first instinct is you have a team full of wonderful designers that you know and trust and that also probably intimately know the brand as good as anyone else could. How do you make the decision to once again reach out and find a new designer rather than working with someone internally? And then how did you find Steven?
Well, first of all, it was part of it was practical. I mean, we're slammed. We are the mm-hmm. busiest we have ever been. We never have any downtime at all. So our brand is, you know, the first thing to get neglected, which isn't cool. You know, we shouldn't neglect our own brand. Part of it was just I wasn't willing to give up my internal resources who I needed working on client work to do our brand. And then the other part of it is just of respect for the craft. You know, I do have designers and illustrators on staff, but we make motion graphics or we make ads for digital platforms. We're not a branding studio. And I have a tremendous amount of respect for what Steven does. It is a specialty. So I think it was a combination of not having the time and resources to do it ourselves, wanting that expertise, and also wanting that outside opinion, because mm-hmm. I think I needed someone who didn't have an emotional attachment and baggage with the brand right. to come at it fresh and say, like, I'm an expert. This is what I do. This is what I think. And there couldn't have been a better fit than Steven. He redesigns studios. I mean, that is what he does. He designs and redesigns studios. So it's not just that he's a branding guy and he does, you know, soda and cars and also maybe a studio. Like, no, that's what he does. I have followed him on Instagram for a long time. I have no idea where I found him. I've just always kind of known of him. He's someone in the industry that people know who he is. And if I were going to hand over the keys to my brand and also, you know, pay a decent amount of money to get it done, I wanted to, you know, make sure that I was working with somebody who I really had a tremendous amount of respect for. And so when it came time, when I said, all right, fine, I'll do it, I didn't talk to any other designers. Like, I knew I wanted Steven to do my brand.
So Steven, once you got this call, how did you feel about Newfangled, looking at their work, looking at their brand, looking at their logo mark? What did you feel was working or maybe not even working about what you were going to start looking at improving?
Well, I mean, Michaela reached out and straight off the bat kind of outlined clearly what she felt wasn't working. And when I had a look at their website, I could straight away see, you know, why she had those concerns. Some of them technical, but also it did seem a bit dated. It seemed a bit not on a par with where their work was. So she said as much. I readily agreed that that was visibly the case. And we kind of took it from there.
So when you're about to move forward now, so you reach out to Steven. What's that first conversation like? Did you put together a brief? Did you just have a nice long phone call? Did you send him all the files you had of the old brand? How did you approach that first kind of engagement with someone like this?
Well, it's funny because I came to it like I was going to have this whole process, and it was like I was going to walk him through the process. You know, all just because that's how I usually come to the table at these kind of engagements. That's my role in it. And he very nicely, in his cool way, like put me in my place and said, this is the process. So yes, my team had Sean Peters, who's creative director, and he primarily focused on copy. Like he had put together an entire deck. We had a committee to really define what we love about our brand, what we feel needs to change, who we are, what words we would use to describe our perfect logo. Like we had this whole rich PowerPoint deck that we put a lot of time in, and we even had a poll go out to the whole company with like different, you know, questions of like, which words would you associate with this, so that we're really getting like the diverse perspective of the whole team. And we felt like we came to the table pretty prepared, but Steven kicked it back to us and said, this is what I need from you. I need you to fill out this questionnaire. And the questionnaire is apparently his standard questionnaire. And it's a lot of things like, you know, if you were to pick three and only three adjectives to describe your logo mark, what would it be? Like practical things like, where are you going to use this logo? How are you going to use it? You know, if you were to, you know, pick an emotion behind it, what's the emotion behind it? So we had to, a lot of it, we kind of harkened back to those original materials that we had done with our team and sort of like reframed it. And then what we found ourselves doing a lot of times with Steven, he'd say, you know, pick two adjectives. And I would say, here's your two adjectives. But I also have to say, here's 10 things that it's not.
Right, right.
You know, so there was a moment in there where it was like, we're confident, but we're not egotistical or cocky. You know, we're creative, but we're not goofy or silly. Mm-hmm. We're friendly and welcoming and inclusive, but we're not like, you know, we're not kind of like dorky and, you know, overly like friendly in a dorky way. Mm-hmm. So because we were just, you know, we wanted to make sure that we were really clear in what we were trying to define. So I think that process that we went through as a team with our, I called them my rebrand ride or dies. And it was like, you know, my lead producer, you know, two creative directors, Jenna, who's, you know, been there from the beginning, and like just a smaller group of people who intimately know the brand and also whose decisions, like design decisions, I like really trust, was on the committee. And then we, like I said, went and brought it out to the larger group and told them what we were thinking and asked a lot of questions to make sure that what the smaller group was thinking was also sort of aligned with what the larger group was thinking. And it was spot on.
That's amazing. You sound like the perfect client, Michaela. I can't tell you how many times I've asked clients, like, tell me what you know this isn't going to be. Because that normally is the easier question.
He didn't want to hear that. Steven didn't want to hear what it is. He's like, no, I need you to tell me what it is. And I'm like, but it isn't this.
That's great. So, you know, when you approach something like this, there's a lot of different factors to consider. And I think A lot of times, most motion designers just think, oh, I need a rebrand. That means I need a new logo. And I think it's so much more than that. But from your perspective, as somebody who's kind of specialized at looking at a studio and seeing what their strengths are, maybe what their weaknesses are, and where the spirit of the studio isn't matching up, what is a refresh or a rebrand look like from your perspective, from a designer's perspective?
Yeah, I think broadly you can kind of categorize these refreshes or rebrands into, yeah, there's two categories really. It's either like an evolutionary thing or a revolutionary thing. And evolutionary would be if things are functioning, but they need to be improved technically. Broadly, that's how you might classify that. And that would be an attempt to try and keep as much equity of their identity as possible and update it or modify it so that you don't lose that equity, but you're also giving it a newness. And then the revolutionary way of rebranding or refreshing would be to literally start fresh. So broadly speaking, when you look at a company that wants to refresh, you kind of try and categorize which of those two buckets you're going to be in. And from there, my studio has a definite process that we go through in order to kind of maximize the value for money and in the time we have allotted. So we kind of work through that, talk through it, agree to it, work through it. And it's a pretty refined, well-honed process at the moment. So there's stages to it, there's sign-offs to it, and most importantly, it's important that the client, we're walking through things and agreeing to things and every step of the way that we're building upward and forward and we don't regress. So I'm sure like Michaela will attest to this. It's very much a partnership, and I think like that there's a mutual trust and established from the outset is crucial, you know, just for the work to get done. And especially if you're trying to create something very good and exceptional.
I'd love to ask you, Michaela, just what was it like being on the other side of the desk, so to speak? You probably have your own set of instincts and procedures, like Steven was talking about, when you're working for a client. But in this situation, you're essentially the client. What was that like being on the other side, where also you're a designer? You know, where does that relationship with Steven start off, and then how does it grow throughout that process?
I think one thing that I've learned from working with a lot of clients is a lot of times work can get watered down because sometimes clients don't have the confidence to write a brief, stick to the brief, and not backpedal when things start to get a little bit more bold than they thought. And that's not all clients, it's some clients, but I went into this with the very firm intention that I was not going to do that. I find Steven to be an exceptionally talented designer. I loved his work, and that's why I hired him. So I even wrote a little affirmation about letting the experts do their job. I worked very hard on a brief and made sure that I came to a consensus with my team of what we were looking to do. And then I stuck to it. And if I started going off brief, which I'm human, I did a few times, Steven would remind me of the brief and I'd say, you're right, you're right. So I think you just need to remember that you hired an expert so that you could get expert advice. And if you end up just making all the calls yourself, you may as well just have hired somebody who knows Photoshop. you know, so that's basically what it came down to. As I know, when my clients hire me for a reason, I want them to listen to me and have that be a mutual partnership. And I treated Steven with that same respect, or I think I did, Steven. I hope I tried to anyway.
Did she, Steven?
100%. And I think this was a particularly great example of the best possible outcome. I mean, I've worked with quite a few design studios or animation studios, and I'm always very cognizant that you're dealing with people who are at bare minimum visually sophisticated and very often have teams of very talented people, designers working with them too. And so it's kind of a double-edged sword, because you know that they have their own visual opinions on things. That can also be very helpful. It can be a hindrance. But like I say, the main thing is that there's a mutual trust happening. And when there is, and you have a client who's a visually astute person, it's the best outcome because it will bring you to places that you wouldn't have gone yourself. And it's a collaborative process that actually ends up greater than the sum of its parts. That's definitely, in my opinion, how this turned out. And a large part of that was due to Michaela being respectful of my opinions, but also not being shy with her own ideas. And yeah, it was very fruitful and, you know, ideal in my mind how it turned out. Yeah.
Well, let's get into kind of the nuts and bolts of this, because there's so much I'm really interested in, especially because, you know, we're talking about a studio that was successful. When you looked at the existing brand and the existing website and the logo, and then kind of stared at the brief that, you know, Michaela carefully put together, what were the hallmarks of the things that you were trying to protect or ensure that they still existed in all of your new work? And was there anything that you knew right off the bat after having looked at all this and evaluated that you saw as a place that you could elevate or push or refine?
Well, I think Michaela was very clear from the outset that although I did explore some things, that I tried to retain some of the equity that had been there before certain iterations. There was one iteration that had like a bowler hat, and I definitely tried to advocate for trying to retain some link with the past. But Michaela was very clear about her wanting to push into the future and have very much of a fresh take on their studio. I think that was because, unlike a lot of companies who maybe feel like a identity, a rebrand, refresh will kind of boost their business, first of all, that's not really the case. An identity is, that's exactly what it is. It's purely a logo, it's purely identification. But I think Michaela, the concept behind this was that, you know, they're a very successful business, and it was simply that their current identity wasn't reflective of who they were, their standard of work, how mm-hmm. where they'd grown to. And therefore, that was the justification for kind of leaving the past behind and kind of putting a new flag in the ground and starting fresh. I think it's very often the case where a business will be fine with kind of a not so great identity, let's say, you know, because the business very often doesn't rely heavily on that. Businesses that do heavily rely on that might be businesses that are very shelf aware, you know, they mm-hmm. need to compete visually on a shelf to be successful and in terms of their branding. But, you know, Newfangled was a very viable business, busy. And in fact, it was almost a testament to how busy and successful they were that it took X amount of years to actually look at their identity and go, you know, right. Maybe we have time to look around and tweak this. So from my point of view, it's very understandable why they were where they were and also why they wanted to kind of pivot into a totally new feeling and direction.
Michaela, describe the logo to me, because it has a lot of different interesting elements that add up to something that's very unique for our industry, but I have a feeling that there's a lot more under the surface that means a lot to the people of Newfangled.
So, okay, so this is a podcast. So I want everybody to close your eyes. Picture a lowercase n that's really kind of stretched out in the cadence of a rainbow. And then in the middle of it, there's a sparkle. And so it sort of looks like an eye with the sparkle as the pupil. Okay, so that's the overall mark. Now, what that means to someone who is outside of Newfangled, like a client or just somebody looking at the mark, it really is supposed to say newness. Obviously, it's the letter N, right, for Newfangled. There's a sparkle in the eye. It's about being a member of that audience and bringing in sort of that wow factor. Like, you look at our work and there's a wow factor, there's a sparkle there. But then under the logo itself is really something that embodies our values and sort of who we are internally. So the N is also sort of in the shape of a rainbow, which we have a lot of values as it pertains to diversity and inclusion. And then the star itself, each point of the star represents a different, you know, point of our moral compass. And then we decided to make it a lowercase n, like sort of very intentionally, because we are very confident. It's a wide set lowercase n, like you couldn't knock it over, but we want to own that we're a boutique agency. We're small, we're focused, and we don't have a big ego, but we stand very strong and unwavered in our commitment to embodying the principles reflected in that North Star. So there's definitely like two sides to the coin where it's, you know, if I were to just take a glance at it, it kind of looks like an eye, like with a sparkly pupil, which is like, yeah, that's newness. But then under the, you know, it's an onion of a logo, because there's so much nuance to what it actually means to us and who we are as a company. And then when you blow it out into the palette, you know, we really wanted to use color and font choices to make the brand feel friendly, inclusive. And so our palette is blue and pink and black and white, which feel like, you know, the furthest ends of the spectrum for both race and gender identity. And so pulling back on that and just sort of a less is more and just showing either extreme of the palette really sort of helped solidify that we're a very inclusive shop and how much that means to us.
I love that. I mean, I think it's so rare for a logo to be anything more than just cool. And I feel like even when you're out in the world talking about your studio, talking about your new work, having those layers sometimes can come in so handy. When you're just sitting in the room waiting for a meeting to start, somebody asks something about like, well, why is the logo an N? Or why is it that
I... Do you have an hour? Do you have 2 hours? Yeah. I'll explain it to you.
I feel like it's one of those great little tools that you know you can always rely on. Like you just mentioned, you know, that there's confidence now in this studio. Having that is just a little bit of like confidence that can give you that little edge when you're just, you know, you're talking, you're just kind of waiting for the meeting to begin, or you're somebody's flipping through a book and another person's looking at the logo. I just love that there's so many tools within what looks like a fairly innocent, innocuous logo.
Yeah. And the fact that I was able to cram all of that into a logo because I had such an exceptional designer working on it, I think is going to give everybody else false hope that you can get so much meaning into a mark, because I can't tell you how many times Stephen said to me, this is a mark. It is to identify your company. It is not to write the history books of everything you ever felt about your company. But you know what? It kind of did. And that's the amazing thing about it.
I have to ask you the hard question, Stephen, because I think this is something that a lot of designers struggle with. But when I looked at it, I was really impressed by how it felt classic and it felt timeless, but it didn't feel nostalgic. Like I could see hints and pieces of maybe references, but it felt way more than the sum of its parts. Do you have any methodology towards making something feel that way? Like feel something that it's not that hard to make something feel classic and be able to know where it came from. And it's just kind of pulling something out from the graveyard and resurrecting it and sticking on someone's, you know, product or studio and hoping it gels. But this does something so much more than that. I mean, we have a lot of unique parts, right? You have the lowercase n, you have the star, that there are all those different elements, but all together, it just has this really fresh feeling that it doesn't feel safe. It doesn't feel rounded off. It doesn't feel, like I said, nostalgic or old. How did you accomplish that? Because I think that's something a lot of designers want to achieve, but there's real no good way, no process to start in that kind of quest for that look.
Well, that's very flattering. I appreciate you saying that. I'm a fan of modernism, and I think the reason why I have an approach which is based around modernist principles is that it's been shown to work and shown to last. And when creating an identity, not only for the client in the immediate present with their needs, but you want to make something that's done once and done right and that can last forever. So I always feel like the modernist principles of reduction and simplicity are something to abide by and try and embody in the work that I make. So I think this is a good example of that. There's nothing extraneous in the design. In terms of my process and how to get here, I mean, I have a whole library of reference books of some of the best work that's ever been made that I always look at in a cautious way, hopefully not to be influenced, but also to try and elevate the work that I'm making to that standard, but also to ensure that I'm not doing something that hasn't been done before. And that's one of the biggest tasks that I personally face when trying to create a mark that's very simple but ownable. It's very hard to find something that with simple geometry hasn't been done before or isn't reminiscent of something that somebody else has seen before. And certainly when I present work, when I presented this work with Michaela, there was a bunch of iterations where the reaction immediately is like, oh, that reminds me of this. This reminds me of that. With this particular one, I think Michaela noted it reminded her of an element of a certain football team. And I think, you know, that it's my job to articulate maybe why that isn't a worry and that isn't concerning, and that in fact, there's no link between these two things. So all of that is to say, I do have a pretty rigorous process, and it is all aimed towards the client's benefit again, it's like you just hope that the client trusts that you're doing due diligence in all these areas, you know?
One of the things that I'm most impressed by Newfangled, since I ran into them, since I even doing my Demo Reel Dash course, Newfangled was one of the first studios I wanted to talk about. The diversity that Newfangled expresses in their styles, the diversity in clients, you know, and type of work you take on. But really more than anything, the focus on diversity just in the world in terms of what this industry needs going forward, both on the client side, from the artist side, that is a hallmark, a focus of, I'm assuming, Michaela's kind of emotional direction in this industry. But how do you take all of those things and actually also integrate it into the brand, into the logo that I'm assuming you want to have it stand for a long time? How do you fold even something like that into the brand itself?
That speaks, I think, to a little bit later in the process after we have a mark that's saying primarily what it needs to say for the business. I always try and really clearly differentiate what a logo can do and what branding can do. Like I say, like a logo is simply identification. The branding can speak to all of the things that you want to impart and the kind of empathy and relationship you want to build up with its viewers or your clients and stuff like that. So when talking to Michaela, yeah, it was very clear that diversity and that the identity of the origins of the studio and their interests as a studio and the people who make up the studio was reflected in some way. And in this particular case, we looked to coloring to reflect that. You know, it was actually a little bit later in the process when we got to different kind of color palettes and we tried a bunch of things and what made logical sense to reflect their studio's diversity was to use a combination of colors. And in this case, it was black and white, which are opposites and include the whole spectrum of shades. And then blue and pink, which, you know, historically have connotation towards gender. And so it was a balance of those four colors that seemed most appropriate to the studio itself and their ethos and their identity.
I think that's great. I mean, it's such a unique choice of colors because it says so much about the diversity kind of focus without having to shout it at the same time. I feel like right now we're in an industry where, Michaela, I don't know if you feel this way, but it's very white, male, 40-something dominated. And there are a lot of studios scrambling to appear diverse. Then it feels like those studios are shouting it and it feels like it's temporary. It feels ephemeral. It doesn't feel very authentic. So I really appreciate the fact that it's integrated at the core. But it's not something that's like the first thing when you walk in the door, it's screaming to you out loud. Do you have any opinions on how Steven was able to integrate that into the brand so naturally?
Well, I'll say that there was one piece of it that was sort of a really beautiful, I don't want to say a mistake, but it was just something that was uncovered in the process, which was when I saw that logo, and I got to tell you, there was like 4 million logos in a Google Slides presentation. And I said, that stopped me in my tracks. And part of the reason was that lowercase n looked like a rainbow to me. Mm-hmm. And that's not necessarily something like we briefed in. You know, I didn't say I wanted to like, you know, make it the gay pride flag or something, but that it reflected the rainbow in its shape, but also reflected back that it's the audience and the newness in their eye made me really feel like it aligned with like the diversity of audiences that we serve and then the diversity within our team. And, you know, me being a member of the gay community, obviously a rainbow has a certain connotation to me, but a rainbow just means all different types of things coming together, all different types of people coming together. So that was something that sort of was like just a little magical moment that was unintended. And when it happened, it was like, oh yeah, let's lean into that. And the color piece was part of it. I feel like Steven was really nice. And whenever I had an idea, even if it was bad, he would just show me that it was bad instead of telling me it was bad. Or he might make a little face, but then he would show me it was bad. And one of the ideas that I had is I wanted like the palette to feel like different skin tones. I was like, oh, what if we did like, you know, we had like this, you know, a pale pink and then we had like a really dark brown and we had all like these different skin tones and it could feel like, you know, it's so inclusive. And he showed it to me and I thought, wow, that looks like I'm trying too hard and being inauthentic. And we're not, you know, we're not a minority owned company. We're an LGBT and women owned company. And I want to be inclusive, but also be authentic to who I am. And so, you know, in more discussion, actually what Stephen helped me to understand that I didn't come to the table with myself is that showing restraint with what you're selecting can sometimes say more than trying to like throw the entire rainbow at it. So I kind of came at it with like, no, we have to include everyone. And this needs to feel like everyone needs to see themselves in it. And Stephen, you know, in his very quiet way helped me understand, as well as I got to give credit to, Corey, one of my creative directors, that he really understood the value of restraint and selecting those things that had an opposite nature to them and letting our audience kind of fill in the blanks felt more powerful than trying to throw everything at it. And the palette is very limited, and that's really intentional.
I think it looks beautiful. I love that experience of, as soon as you get put in the client seat, especially as a creative, you almost always, because you're the one who's trying to express restraint or express kind of approaching things, not in a safe way, but in like a directed way, that your initial instinct was like more, pound, let's get more in there, let's put it out. It's so funny that it's such a great reminder to anyone out there that sometimes putting on the client hat actually really helps you empathize going forward. Like having that experience is a good reminder. You mentioned the millions of iterations, and I've seen a sneak peek at some of the work that you've done, Stephen. But just as a designer, as someone who's thinking through this, how do you manage that wide range of iterations? There were so many variations. And when someone points out a really great idea, like, oh, that N looks like a rainbow, do you take credit for it? Do you smile and sit back and be like, oh, I meant it to be a rainbow? Or do you just take the compliment and move forward?
That is a great example of a fortunate kind of happenstance, because the rainbow, although I clearly can see it, you know, was not the intent behind it. Mm-hmm. But in terms of creating a wide variety of options, I mean, even just in the sketch phase, that's why the first week of an identity project, I kind of go dark, because I'm just, there's so much work that needs to be done. And it's mostly in just getting things on paper and seeing that you've tried everything in your mind. And that's super crucial. And then, you know, maybe you've done hundreds of little doodles and sketches or ideas, and then you're going to pick out maybe the best five out of them. So it's just a matter of due diligence that you just need to constantly draw for days and days and make sure that you're not leaving any rock unturned. And then at least at that point, you can go with some degree of confidence to the client and say, okay, look, I've tried everything I can think of, and this is the best solutions, you know, that I could recommend at this point in the process, you know. And you gotta make sure you're doing that so that they can feel confident in you, and that you can feel confident that you have tried things, you know, that you really have explored what needs to be explored. And sometimes it's the case that the first thing you draw will be the best idea. And sometimes it's the case that, you know, after 3 or 4 days when you're exhausted and you can't think of anything else, you'll wake up that night with the one, you know. So it's like there's no rhyme or reason to it. It's everyone who's involved in the creative profession can attest to just the mystery of where ideas come from. But there's no doubt that you got to put in the work to get there. So you just got to keep drawing and keep drawing. And, you know, I certainly didn't show Michaela and her team all of these sketches at all. Like I say, I would just present the ones that I thought were successful. But I guess, yeah, in hindsight, you look back and you go, well, that's a lot of N's, you know, it's a lot of letter N's, but
right,
needs to be done. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel like there's definitely a time when I was directing multiple jobs at the same time that I wish I had a like an independent observer that could just track the development of anything and see where everybody agreed on something and how that kind of spiderwebbed to the next revelation and the next revelation, all in the hopes of trying to make those processes more efficient. But no matter what, like you said, if you got it right at the beginning, you wouldn't have known that until you did a bunch and then looked back.
Yeah.
And if you didn't get it right at the beginning, you've had to do all those. The magic bullet always ends up being, you just have to do the work. At some point, like, there's no physically smaller unit of energy that you can consume. You just have to put the time in and get the buy-in from the client at the same time.
Truly, and that's why I think it's super crucial that the work that you do is something that you actually really enjoy, because it will require your time and your life force. So I love doing this work, and it can be frustrating at times, but a lot less frustrating than any other job I've ever had. So it's a pleasure, really. Yeah.
Well, and when it's done right, probably one of the truly more frustrating aspects of working in this industry in motion design is how ephemeral most of our work is. Mm. That it can take three times longer to make something than it actually lives. There's not much work in our industry that people stand back and be like 10 years later, say, oh, that was the defining thing of that type of work. But the work you do, if done well, and if it's done in accordance with the studio and the client's needs, it's probably one of the more permanent types of work you could do in our industry.
Yeah, it's actually a reason why I kind of pivoted into this area. I was in motion design for maybe 15 years, so I definitely could see exactly what you're talking about. And the other side of that, though, with motion work is you have a lot more freedom, I think, you know, to explore and express and try new things and fun things. I mean, that's why I got into motion design back in 2003 when I did. So, you know, there's pros and cons to both things, but I definitely do want to think that I'd like to think that, you know, somebody saw the work, let's say, that I created for Newfangled as a mark on a piece of paper or on a screen in 50 years time, that it would be hard to place time wise, or, mm-hmm. you know, that it would still look maybe fresh as it does now. So that's the goal.
You know, I was looking through, I got a sneak peek at some of the materials, and I've seen some of the amazing, the extensive kind of like work process that Stephen went through. Mm-hmm. And I saw a couple times of mentions of the newfangled North Star.
Yep.
As a concept, which in the end, you know, if you look at the blog post and see the examples, that is very well evoked in the final kind of brand. But can you just talk a little bit about what the newfangled North Star is to you and your company?
Sure. So the North Star, you think of it like a coin with two sides. So one side is, you know, sort of what we bring to the clients and to our audience. And then the other side is more of like inward facing. And it's about, you know, the morals and values of our team and what it means to be a newfangled, you know, talent on the newfangled team. And there's four points to the star. One point is respectful partnerships. And then the other point that's opposite that is growth potential. So the idea of the points being opposite each other is that there's sort of like a push-pull in any relationship. And you want to have respectful partnerships, not only with the people within your team, respecting their boundaries, their expertise, their work-life balance, but then also having seat at the table partnerships with your client where it really feels like you're an extension of their teams. That's what respectful partnership's about. And then on the sort of the opposite side of that is the growth potential. So we want to grow as a company, both in how we can impact our clients' brands and how we can, you know, just do cool stuff, you know, like grow as artists. And I don't mean that in the literal sense of the word. Like, I'm not trying to be some big studio. I like being a boutique studio, but growth in that we're always making forward progress. And that can be a push-pull. You want to push the envelope. You want to always be doing, you know, the next cool thing, but you also want to be respectful to your clients and go the extra mile for them. So that's that push-pull. And then the other one is the top and the bottom of the star are business results and engaging creative. Engaging creative is the very top of the star. We want to produce jaw-dropping creative that's best in class, inspiring, and I just want to watch and engage with. But foundationally, at the bottom of the star is business results. So it seems simple, but this can get lost among a lot of creatives, is that we don't want to just produce simply the most visually impressive work. We want to keep business results at the foundation of all of the work that we're doing, because ultimately that's why our clients are coming to us. And so on the client side of the coin, it's making sure that we hit their business goals and that we're producing, you know, something for them that's going to do something for their business. But then for us too, it's also business results, because that's what sets us apart from other creative shops. And that creates more and more business results for us. So there's basically the four points of the star. They have push-pull, and each one of them has a dual meaning, whether you're on the team or whether you're a client.
Man, I almost feel like I could stand up and give you a standing ovation, having been at multiple studios big name studios, high profile studios that struggled, you know, having been with them both when they've gone through rebranding, rebuilding websites, relaunching themselves out into the world. They don't have that clear of an idea of who they are, their reason for being, their goals for the future. And it certainly is not evoked in their actual logo or in their brand or in their website at the end. Was that something that you developed over time from the moment you opened when it was just, you know, you and your wife? How long did it take for you to kind of like develop this idea of the North Star? Because I think that that's probably something that was incredibly powerful for Stephen to consider, you know, visually. But I just feel like as a business, it's so rare to run into someone that understands that much about their day-to-day work and their future.
Well, that's kind of the beauty of overhauling your brand when you're 12 years old and in a having a great deal of success and momentum is you know who you are at that point. Whereas at the beginning of, you know, my journey, I didn't really know who we were yet. I had an idea, but we had to figure it out. So how long did the North Star take to develop? It's probably over the last year that we really, you know, cemented what it was. I worked with a coach. I find outside perspective to be really valuable. And I'm also cognizant that I'm the boss and maybe not everyone's going to tell me their full opinion all the time. And so I work with a diversity and inclusion coach, and she really helps me define things. I have actually someone hanging up on my wall in front of me that says fair, empowering, and intuitive. Those are three pillars of how I want to be a leader. So she helped me define that, and she helped me define, you know, the pillars of the company. And those things were all always there, but she helped me put words to it. And it's like anything else. It's just like what Stephen did. It's just putting in the work and putting in the time. It's making time every week to meet with a coach and, you know, carving out an hour or two every week to do a little bit of introspection and think about, you know, who you want to be as a company, who you are, what's important to you, what's important to your clients. And then over time, it just starts to gel.
Man, I almost feel like we could do another podcast with you on just running your own business beyond just creating a refresh or a rebrand, because those are so refreshing to hear, because I think there's probably a lot of creatives that look to a studio like Newfangled and to you, Michaela, as an example of where they want to go and where they want to be. What I'm really excited about is that all this stuff comes back into the actual like representation of the refresh. But now that you have this done and you're getting ready to launch, right? This is here. You've done all the hard work. You have the North Star that really helps you kind of know where you are now and where you want to go. How does this affect your day-to-day operations? How do you see this? And once this website's out there and it's in there in the world, what changes from the day before when it's the old brand and the old logo to the next day? How do you carry yourself differently in the world?
I think we're the same company, but outwardly, I think people can understand more the quality and thought that goes into our work because they don't see all that behind the scenes. Like that's not changing about Newfangled, and I would never want that to change. It's really just about reflecting where we're at today. So I'm not sure that anything changes. In terms of defining the North Star, one of my goals personally as a leader is to be more empowering to my staff. So as we grow, you know, it used to be that I could be involved in every single little decision. And over time, I had to start to let go of that. But also I had to let my team know that it's okay to make decisions without me. And so part of the North Star being developed was an exercise in empowering others to know, look, this is the moral compass of the company. So whenever you need to make a decision, look to these four points of the star, find the balance in that decision. Mm-hmm. And this could be a very, you know, this could be a very day-to-day thing. Like the client it's 8 o'clock at night and the client's giving us notes. What do I do? You know? And it's like, all right, well, let's look at the North Star, like engaging creative, business results, growth potential, respectful partnerships. We want to have respectful partnerships with the employees. We want to have respectful partnerships with the client. So let's talk to everybody and find, you know, the middle piece in there. Let's find the boundaries and approach it in a respectful way. And I think that whenever you have little problems throughout your day, like, oh, should this be an overage? Or, this doesn't look as cool when you make the logo bigger, but, you know, it's a direct response ad and we probably should. Like, what should we do? I think there's a lot of questions that come to me throughout the day that I can start to sort of rationalize using the North Star, like what here's decisions that I might make and here's why. And it puts that there as a tool for the employees to make decisions and empower them to do things, you know, on their own without needing, you know, always being directed by me. And that's just crucial for us to grow.
I love that. It really feels like the North Star is the operating manual for everyone internally about how they should think and consider decisions inside Newfangled. And then the new brand, the refresh, is essentially the reflection to the outside world for how they should react and respond to Newfangled. And they feel like,
yes,
they feel really well joined in a way that I think is extremely rare in our industry.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of that goes to my team for taking the time to think about it and do all that introspection. And then Steven is just like a tremendous designer. I mean, everything he put forward, I was like, that's the one, that's the one, that's the one, that's the one. Like, I loved them all. And then right. when I saw this one, it like literally floored me. Like, I stopped. So that was cool. That was a cool moment.
I wanted to ask you, in closing, you mentioned, you know, Steven asked a ton of questions. He had this great questionnaire, and he's obviously has like this reserved confidence that I think is something that's rare to run into someone as a business leader or an owner, to have that interaction with someone when they're trying to help you. You mentioned in there that he said, name me only one, but one emotion that you want an audience or a viewer to invoke when they see the logo. Do you remember what that emotion was?
Confidence.
That you said back to him? Confidence. That's great.
Yeah.
That's very good.
We know who we are. We're very confident now. And when our clients hire us, they can trust us because we know what we're talking about. But like I said, not egotistical. Not full of ourselves.
It's a sliding scale.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Quiet confidence. That came up a couple times in today's discussion, didn't it, Motioners? Well, whether it's talking about Steven's working philosophy or the mantra for all of Newfangled Studios, it's really interesting to see how you have to learn who you are and what your business is becoming before you can really even think about refreshing or rebranding your studio or your efforts. And I think this goes for a shop, as well as really going for an individual artist, whether you're a freelancer or you're working in a studio. You have to know where you want to go and who you are right now to really know how to tell someone to remember you by. So I really want to say thanks to Michaela and Steven. This is the kind of conversation you don't get an insight into very often in the world of motion design. Well, that's it. As always, Motioneers, we're here to inspire you, expose things that you would never find before, and just find more voices out there in the world of motion design. Until next time, peace!